you very much. So thank you very much for the organizers for this honor of giving these distinguished lectures. So I'm going to report in the three lectures on work, joint work with Florian Ertisch. And the topic is, so I write it here again, the periodic Langlands program. So it's quite long, but in the ordinary case, and fundamental algebraic representations. Algebraic representations. Okay, so the first talk is, I was required to give a colloquium style talk, so I just warned the experts that they won't learn anything today. In all this talk, P, of course, is a prime number. Okay, so let me very quickly, briefly, tell you something about the classical, what we call the classical local Langlands correspondence. Langlands correspondence. So, for GLN. And I will smoothly go from the classical local Langlands to the periodic, to what we know of the periodic local Langlands correspondence, by going first through some a certain number of intermediate steps to make it more natural. So maybe most of you probably, if I look at the audience, already know this. But QP is the field of periodic numbers, and QP bar is an algebraic closure of QP. Okay, so we have the Galois group, Galois of QP bar over QP. And, and this Galois group contains a dense subgroup, which is called the Weyl group, which I recall the definition here. So the Galois group maps subjectively to the Galois group of the residue field. So FP bar over FP, where FP is the finite field D mod PD, and FP bar is an algebraic closure of FP. So there's a natural subjection like this. And inside the Galois FP bar over FP, you have a natural embedding of Z, which maps N to a what we call an integral power of the Frobenius, which is X maps to X to the P to the N. And the Weyl group, so this is a dense subgroup, and the Weyl group is just the inverse image by definition. QP bar over QP is defined as being the inverse image. Okay? And now we have the theorem, so let me write it here, which, if I write down all the details, would probably lead me till the end of the hour, so I'm just going to write it a very rough sketch of it. So this theorem was proven in 1988 by Harris Taylor, and a few months after with a different proof by Guy Hénard. And the theorem tells you that there is, let me put it like that, natural bijection between two sets of isomorphism classes of representations. So one side is a representation will be denoted by pi. So I'll tell you what this is. On the other side, representation will be denoted by rho n. So what is pi? Pi is here an irreducible smooth representation of GLN of QP. So of course it works for any field extension, finite field extension of QP. just keep QP in the series of talk, over C, over usually infinite dimensional C vector space. I'll tell you after what, record you after what smooth means. And here, so here we have mostly infinite dimensional representations. On this side, so this is the one correspondence, we have n-dimensional representation, n-dimensional semi-simple, again, smooth representation rho of the Weyl group over C plus a nilpotent operator, N, which is a nilpotent operator acting on the underlying space of the representation with a certain commutation relation that I'm not going to recall. I won't need it. Okay, so I have to explain on both sides quickly what smooth means. So here, okay, no, I can do this here. Okay. Okay, thank you. So here, smooth here means that if you take any vector v in the underlying space of the representation, it's fixed, any v is fixed by a sufficiently small open compact subgroup of GLN of ZP, which of course depends on V. Okay? And here, smooth means that if I take rho and if I restrict it to the inner Schaff subgroup, so the inner Schaff subgroup is the kernel of the surjection from Galois QP bar over QP to Galois of FP bar over FP. And if I restrict it to this, then it becomes trivial, becomes one. If I further restrict to an open subgroup of inertia after on an open subgroup, on an open subgroup of inertia. Okay, so this is very roughly the local Langlands correspondence for GLN. And let me mention a further property which turns out to be quite important in the other settings, periodic settings. On the pi side, is that if you consider for any H, so an open compact subgroup, which I will call this compact subgroup H. H, okay. For any H, this space is finite dimensional. And there's a name for this property, it's called pi is admissible. So all the irreducible smooth pi's for GLN are admissible. Okay, so this is just an aside remark. Okay, so we have this local Langlands correspondence, and I'll give one very concrete example in a few seconds for principal series, which is the most simple example. But then I want from there to go to something which I will call the Eladic correspondence, and from the Eladic to the Piadic correspondence, to make it more natural. Otherwise, okay, so let's go. So first, I'll say a few words about the rational local Langlands correspondence. So I'll make a few remarks, basically, on this local Langlands correspondence. The first thing one can remark is the following. The transcendental topology, transcendental topology on C is not used in these definitions. We don't use the topology of C. So that means what? That means that we can replace C, can be replaced by any algebraically closed field of characteristic zero, algebraically closed field of characteristic zero. And I'm going to choose, for instance, the algebraic closed field of characteristic zero, QL bar, algebraic closure of L-adic numbers for L, a prime number, which will be different from my fixed prime number P. I actually could also take QP bar, okay, but that's, I don't want to do that here, okay? So I can do everything over QL bar. That's one thing. One point. Now another point is that it turns out that one can normalize this correspondence so that it is rational, meaning so that it commutes with automorphisms of these fields. And well, I'm not going to explain in detail what that means, I'm just going to give you a consequence, which is automorphisms of QL bar. It implies that if you start with a row N, which is defined over a field E, where E here is not anymore algebraically closed, but is a finite extension of QL, this means a finite extension of QL, and if you consider, so if I start from some row N, which turns out to be defined over E, okay, everything is over QL bar now, but so, then the pi is also defined over E. Pi is also defined over E. Okay. And let me give you an important example. Now, pi, and basically, this is the only example you need to, this is the only example you need to know to follow these lectures. I mean, at least from the classical local Lagrange correspondence. You don't need more than what I'm going to explain to you. So example, let us consider row N to be row 0, so N is 0, and row is a diagonal. Row is chi 1, chi N, so N dimensional, so we have N characters, and I will assume further a certain condition on the chi I, otherwise it would be, what I would say wouldn't be true. I will assume that chi I, chi j minus 1 is different from certain characters which, I will denote one norm character and the norm minus one character, where this thing which I call norm is in fact, well, if you don't know what this is, don't bother, it's just technical assumption, and but otherwise this is the L-adic dichotomic character. L is different from P here. Well, okay, so there's a condition, and now we have such an analogous condition till the very last sentence of my talk on Friday, probably. So this is the way I start to, if you don't have this condition, things are more complicated, and on the periodic side, so far it's not clear how to deal with things. Okay, then, in that case, the pi of rho, the representation of GLN QP associated to such a very simple rho, which is just n-dimensional characters of the Weyl group, is what is called a principal series. So, let me write it, and then I explain. So, I induce from B minus of QP to GLN of QP a certain character, sorry, right? So it's normalized, it's normalized local, I mean rational local Lagrange correspondence from now on, chi 2 norm to the minus n minus 2 until chi n, where by this I mean the following: B minus of QP, it's just the lower triangular matrices in GLN of QP, and where this thing is a character of B minus, but which factors through the torus. So the torus, you have a subjection from B to the torus, you just keep the diagonal, and this character is just a character where you apply chi 1 norm minus n minus 1 to the first entry times k 2 norm minus n minus 2 to the entry here, and so on, and you take the product like this, okay? So I don't write it, but this is the character of the torus. And here, this space is exactly, by definition, the space of functions from GLN of QP to E, which are locally constant, okay, and such that F of B G is chi of B F of G. For any B in B minus of QP and G in GLN of QP. Chi of B, chi is the character of the torus. Okay, which is an element in E minus zero, the field E minus zero. Okay, so this is the underlying E vector space, which is infinite dimensional, as I explained. And now the action of GLN QP on this, well, then I'm going to write it here. It's just given by G applied to F, applied to some element G prime is F of G prime G. Okay, and this is a smooth action and so on, and it is under the conditions I have here, it is irreducible, and this is the pi of rho. So in the sequel, I'm going to write this in a slightly more condensed form to the end of the series of talks. So I will denote by theta the following element. It will be an element of what we say the character group of the torus T, the algebraic torus T, which is by definition the group of homomorphism as algebraic groups from the torus T into GM, the algebraic group of multiplicative elements, of invertible elements, which sends x1, xn by theta to x1, n minus 1, x2, n minus 2, x, n minus 1. And in using this character, I can simply write pi of rho, this pi of rho, as induction from B minus of QP to GLN of QP of chi 1 tensor chi n times norm minus 1 composed with theta. Okay, this is a nice way to put the Galois characters aside from the normalization to have a rational. And then comes the crucial remark I'm going to write here, is that you see I didn't specify any. I mean, on rho, I could change the order of the key I. If I put them in any order, obviously I get the same rho. But here it's not at all clear that I get the same representation, because it seems that it heavily depends on the order. And in fact, it doesn't depend. But this is not a trivial fact. It's a crucial point. The order of the I doesn't matter in pi of rho. Obviously, it doesn't matter in rho either. Meaning that if I change the way I write the key I have what we call intertwining operators between all these irreducible GLN, smooth GLN QP representations. And this is a subtle point, well, very classical, but which will completely fail in the periodic theory, and which is kind of at the heart of what I want to explain in this series of talks. Okay. Now that I have the rational local Langlands correspondence, and I want to switch to something which I would like to call the eladic local Langlands correspondence. And with L different from P. Okay. So the idea will be to take the classical local Langlands correspondence and to add topology on both sides. And it will turn out that this will basically be an equivalent formulation. Usually, people in this area, they do exactly the converse. They want to get rid of the topology to have something nice algebraic. Here, we put back some topology, because in the periodic setting, we'll have some topology and it won't be algebraic in general. So we have to deal with the topology. And there's a nice statement here that I want to recall to you, or tell you. So, okay, so several points. So first, there's an old theorem which tells you that if you have this kind of representation, rho n, with rho not necessarily semisimple, by the way, here, but I mean over E, n dimensional over E, then this is the same thing, turns out this is the same thing as a continuous linear, so the important word here is continuous linear representation of field of A group on a finite dimensional E vector space. And if I have a finite dimensional E vector space, so this is the same thing as E to the N, okay, so maybe plus N, and I have a natural topology here which is just induced by the Eladic topology on E. E is a finite extension of QL, so I have the Eladic topology on E, and so I have the Eladic topology on N copies of E, and so I have a topology on my vector space this time, and I want my representation of the Weyl group to be continuous. I have a topology on this Weyl group. This is a compact group. No, sorry, this is not a compact group, but I have a topology on this Weyl group. Sorry. Okay, so, and this is an old theorem which is, well, I think it's due to Dolin, but it uses a theorem of Grothendieck, which is called the Eladic monodromy theorem. Okay, so there's something like this. And it has been used in this sense. We start from a continuous thing and we get rid of the topology by taking a Weidling representation. I use it backwards. Okay, okay. And now we're going to do the same thing on the GNN side. We're going to add some Eladic topology. Okay, and I forgot something. There's another thing that I want to say here, another definition. When we say that a rho n on this side is integral, if it contains an OE lattice. So when I have an Eladic field, I have the integers of the field. That's the integers in E. You know, that's the Eladic integers in E. Okay. So it's called an integral if it contains an OE lattice, which is invariant under the action of the group and under N. Invariant. Equivalently, the thing that the continuous linear representation of the Weyl group also has an invariant lattice. Also, I also have an invariant lattice on the other side also. And the reason I say that is because now there's a very easy way to state that I have an invariant lattice on the continuous linear representation of the Weyl group. It just means that this representation uniquely extends to the Gara group. Remember, this Weyl group was a dense subgroup of the Gara group, and if I have a representation of the Weyl group, of course it's not necessarily a representation of the Gara group, but if it is integral, if there is an invariant lattice, it is. And since it is dense, you know, by continuity, there's a unique possible extension. So in the end, I get a continuous. If I start here with an integral rho n, I actually get a representation of Galois, not of Weyl, representation, continuous representation of Galois. Of QP bar over QP. Okay, so that's all for the Galois side. Now, on the GLN side this time, there's an analogous definition. When we start with the representation pi of GLN QP over E, we say that pi is integral if it contains an invariant OE lattice. So you have to be careful about what you call the OE lattice here because you are dealing with infinite dimensional representations. But it means that it doesn't contain any E line. So pi is integral if it contains an invariant under the action of GLN QP OE lattice. Of course, I mean, by OE lattice, I mean the OE module which generates the E vector space and which doesn't contain any E line. Okay, and now, so this is equivalent, by the way, This is equivalent to the fact that there exists an invariant eladic norm, invariant norm on the underlying space of pi. What is an invariant norm? It is a norm, an eladic norm. So I'm not going to explain here what is an eladic norm. You can guess something which looks like what we have on E, although I didn't explain it. Anyway, I can explain what invariant means. It means that the norm of GV is the norm of V for any G in GLN of QP. And if you have an invariant norm, at least I can explain to you what is the corresponding lattice. It is just the vectors which have norm less or equal than 1. You get a lattice, and you can go back and, okay. So that all these things are equivalent. And now there's a nice result of Marie-France Vignard on this integral pi. So I'm going to recall it here. Which is the following. And this result is, again, will tell us that we can add, well, maybe artificially, but we can add eladic topology also on the GLN side, and this won't change anything. So Vignard tells us two things. First, that the rational correspondence, the rational correspondence respects integrality. Okay. And the second thing, which is not at all trivial, it is up to equivalence. There is only one invariant norm on a pi, on an integral pi. There is only one invariant norm, up to equivalence of norms, of course. Only one invariant norm on an integral pi. This means that up to commensurability, there's only one invariant OE lattice. Okay, and so then we can define the eladic correspondence as follows, with all that I've said now. So we are going to go from the rational correspondence to the eladic correspondence for integral representations. So I'll start with rho n defined over E, which is integral. Okay. Then I go, I really want something eladic. So I start with eladic, I want to finish with eladic. So I start with rho, which is an eladic representation of Galois of QP bar over QP. From there, by what I've explained here, I can go to some rho n, which is this time an integral representation of the Weyl group. Okay, this is what is explained there. Then I can semi-simplify my rho so that it fits into the framework of the local Langlands correspondence. And then I can apply the rational local Langlands correspondence. So this is 2, and then I get a pi, which turns out to be integral by the result of Vignard. Okay? And so I can complete. So I have a unique up to equivalence invariant norm, and when I have a norm, I can complete. And I get a big space, which I will call pi of rho, which is an eladic Banach space. And almost by definition, somehow, eladic Banach space endowed with a continuous, so this time, of course, it's no more smooth, it's a continuous action of GLN of QP. So it's an eladic Banach space over E, my eladic field. Okay, and the eladic correspondence is really this. I go from rho to pi of rho. And so this is still, remember that my pi here was an irreducible smooth representation. Well, this eladic Banach space is still topologically irreducible. It is admissible in a certain sense. Okay, but it's still topologically irreducible. This is an important point. And there's a further result of Vinayas, which tells you that really there's nothing new, in fact, in this correspondence, even though we add what looks like a complicated LID topology. And this result tells you that the smooth vectors of pi of rho is exactly pi. So in other words, you can go from pi to pi of rho and backwards in the following way. Smooth vectors in pi of rho is pi. So this is again due to Vinayas. So by smooth vectors, I mean the vectors v on which a small enough h acts trivially. Of course, it will contain pi because pi is already smooth, but it is not bigger than pi. This is the point. Okay. And if I go back to my previous example, and if I start with a row which is like this, okay, with integral ti, I mean, it is a representation of the Galois group, and I also have this condition, so I'm not writing it, that chi j minus 1 must be different from three characters. Then what is pi of rho? Well, this is very, it is also something which looks very, which is very close to this, but except that instead of taking locally constant functions, I take continuous functions. Okay, so this is a, well, usually we can write it like this, V minus QP to GLN QP. We still have this Q1 tensor n composed with norm minus 1 composed with theta. And now I just write C0 for continuous. This means continuous functions f from GLN QP in E such that f of bg is the same thing. The only thing that I replace locally constant by continuous. And there's an invariant norm on this, which is just that the norm of f is the maximal on g of the norm of f of g, norm of f is maximal on g of norm of f on g, where here this is the character norm on E. And this maximal is finite. Okay, so we have this LID correspondence. So here I should mention for the experts that Matthew Emerson has a variant of this pi of rho, which is not anymore irreducible. And the reason why he defined this variant is because it's probably the one that occurs on his completed cohomology spaces. But here I just follow the traditional approach of Vinayas. But you can define a modification of this pi of rho. But most of the time, it's still irreducible. Okay, even in Emerson's correspondence. Okay, so now I want to go from this Eladic correspondence to the Piedic one. I mean, I just make the Piedic one more natural. Okay. So, I'm not going to give many details because this wouldn't be any more a colloquium style talk. But still, this is, I guess, 4. So, Piedic correspondence for GL2QP. But I'll give the example of such row for GL2QP. This is not too hard. So it turns out that for GL2QP, by work of a certain number of people, there's work of my work, for some examples, then there's work of Colmez, then there's work of Pascunas, of Kizin, of Emerson, and also Schneider, Teitelbaum, Vinayas, and so on, and other people, for which I apologize if I quote them here, which in the end provided a beautiful and completely new Piedic correspondence for GL2QP that really occurs on suitable cohomology spaces. And I cannot really explain this correspondence here, but again, I give you an example. So it's very similar to this rho. It's something very similar to rho goes to pi of rho, where here rho is really a two-dimensional representation of the Galois group over E, over a two-dimensional E vector space, but here E this time is a finite extension of QP. So it's QP and not anymore QL. Okay, and here this is also a periodic Banach space. Periodic Banach space over E plus the continuous section of DL2 of QP, which satisfies a certain condition. It is admissible. It is even topologically of finite length, but there are a certain number of differences that I want to stress right now. Sorry, I forgot something important here, I apologize for that. This Banach space is what we call unitary. By unitary, I just mean that there is an invariant norm. Well, because there was an invariant norm on pi to complete. Write it where it's still here. So you have to remember that on the Banach space. So we call this unitary. It has an invariant norm. And here also, unitary plus unitary. The Banach construct also always has an invariant norm. This is a trace of the fact that you started from a real representation of the Galois group. But now, there is a certain number of differences, important differences, that I want to mention to you. And then I'll give you an example. So, I would mention two main differences. One. So the first thing is that in general, if I take pi of rho, and if I look at the smooth vectors exactly like I did, so I take the vectors on which is small enough h at trivially fixes the vector, then it can be zero. In the previous case, it was never zero. It was always the pi. Here, it really can be zero. And it's even worse than that. I can also, in that setting, take what we call the locally algebraic vectors. It is the element V on which a small enough H maybe doesn't act trivially, but acts through a finite dimensional algebraic representation of H. This can also be zero. The only thing that is never zero, and this is a deep theorem of Schneider and Teitelbaum, is if you take what we call the locally analytic vectors. And they're never zero, they're even dense. This is Schneider-Teitelbaum. But in these lectures, I'm not considering locally analytic vectors. This is something more complicated. Schneider-Teitelbaum. Okay, so this tells you that it tells you this is a new correspondence. You have nothing you may have nothing algebraic in this business. So you cannot get it from the classical local correspondence in general. This is what it tells you. Whereas the analytic one, you see, it was just basically the classical local Langlands correspondence. And the second thing which is different is that in general, we have to deal with reducible pi of rho. But it's not just very special cases. Now it's really many cases. So pi of rho can be reducible. And let me explain why we have to do this. And for this, I'm going to consider exactly the same case, chi1, chi2, two characters of the Galois group. And again, I'm going to assume something which makes life much simpler for me, is that this character, chi1, chi2 minus 1, doesn't belong to 1, epsilon minus 1, where epsilon is the p adic Platonic character. okay, time character, if you don't know what it is, analogous to this character which I denoted norm previously. So what is the pi over in that case? So you see, we want basically to do the same as in the LID case. So we consider and B minus of QP to G L2 of QP of chi1 tensor chi2 composed with, so I have to be careful now, epsilon minus 1 composed with theta. This is a product of, I basically induce chi1 and k2, but I may have to normalize things in a certain way. And I say continuous functions. Okay. But this time, the trouble is that this is definitely different. So this is a topologically irreducible periodic Banach space, unitary, all properties you may wish, but the trouble is that it's not isomorphic to the other one. So it's not isomorphic to this one. Chi2 tensor chi1, epsilon minus 1 composed with theta, and where you take T0 functions. So what are we going to do with this? Well, the idea is pretty simple. If they're not isomorphic, you just take both of them. So let me write this down. Well, maybe I write it here. Yeah. So the idea, take both of them. And so in that case, pi of rho is indeed the direct sum of the two. Chi1 tensor chi2, blah, blah, so I don't write the rest. I mean, just plus and chi2 tensor chi1. Okay? My God. Yeah, okay. So, but now in that case, there's another important case which I have to consider, is there's a non-split extension between two characters now under these conditions. So I start with such a row, and the theorem, one of the theorems that goes into this local Langlands correspondence is that there is a unique extension between these two principal series in the world of periodic Banach spaces admissible with an invariant norm. I'm not writing this. I'm not writing the details. We run out of time. There's a unique extension, non-split extension, like this. So and chi. Let me see. I have to take the right one. Chi two tensor chi one up to the shift zero and pi of rho and of chi 1 tensor chi 2, 0. And in that case, the pi of rho is this unique extension. So, you know, if you have two characters on the Galois side, you have two principal series. If you have an extension, then you have an extension on the GL2QP side. And now it's time to speak about something fundamental in the periodic and completely new in the periodic setting, which is called the functor of Colmez. Yeah, so, I see. Yeah, so thank you. So this is five. So I have to go faster than I expected, of course, the functor of Colmez. And I think it's a natural place to speak about it, because now if you look at this correspondence in the periodic world, here you have again two characters and then two principal series. Here you have an extension between two characters, a corresponding extension between two principal series. So it definitely looks like something functorial is going on. Okay, each piece corresponds to, on the Galois side, corresponds to a piece on the GL2 side. So this is something completely unusual in the classical world of classical local Langlands correspondence. And indeed, this was, there was a functor was constructed by Colmez. So he constructed a functor from, which I will call F, from the category of finite length admissible unitary, finite length means topologically of finite length, but unitary continuous representation of Galois of QP bar over QP, not necessarily of the roots of GL2 QP over E to a category of finite dimensional p-adic representation of Galois of QP bar over QP. And this functor goes through some extra stuff which I had planned to describe a bit, but I have no time, which is called epsilon phi gamma modules, which is something which was introduced years before by Fontaine. And he had proven that these phi gamma modules, which are basically modules over a power series ring, are just the same thing as Galois epsilon phi gamma modules, are the same thing as Galois representations. And it was a kind of fantastic coincidence that you have to use them to build this functor. And this functor, of course, is it's covariant, it's exact, and it maps f of pi of rho to rho. And so it gives it maps each principal series to chi1. I mean, you have it here. This thing goes to chi1, this one goes to chi2. Okay. So in this talk, I would mention that it's not known how to generalize. I mean, it's not known. There is some work of Schneider and Vinyard, basically, but it's not sufficiently known how to generalize F from GL2QP to GLNQP. And so in particular, strictly speaking, I won't need the results concerning F, but it's very important to have them in mind for what I'm going to do in these lectures, even though I don't really need them. There's another ingredient here on the GLNQP side. So maybe I'll just quickly mention them. It's, again, which has no equivalent in the classical local Langlands correspondence, it's called stairways. So here I just mentioned very quickly what it is. A stairway is an irreducible representation of GL to FP, the residue field, over in characteristic P, so over what I would call KE, which is by definition the residue field of OE, OE mod some uniformizer. And so I'm not going to, I'm going to say much less than what I expected here, but basically when we have a row, all this p-adic correspondence extends in characteristic P. Okay, pi of row, I mean row goes to pi of row, also has a characteristic P version. So if you start with a rho bar, which is two-dimensional over KE, KE is a finite extension of FP, then you can associate to it pi of rho bar, which is this time smooth. We go back to the world of smooth representation because we're in characteristic P over a finite field, so there's no topology anymore apart from the discrete topology. So it's a smooth representation of GL2 of QP over KE with certain number of properties. So it basically it's just reduction modulo P of the p-adic one. And what we call the stairway of rho bar, so here. By definition, the stairways, well, there are several definitions, but here in this talk, we call stairways of rho bar. This is the set of stairways that appear in the circle for the action of GL2 ZP of pi of rho bar, so restricted to GL2 ZP. So by the way, a stair weight is the same thing also, since it's an easy exercise, as an irreducible representation of GL to ZP over KE. You have a natural surjection from GL to ZP to GL to FP. And you can replace FP by ZP here to be consistent with this. And I recall to you that the circle is the maximal semi-simple sub-representation. So why do I speak about stair weights? I mean, we have pi of rho bar. Why do I deal with such a thing? This is because the set of stair weights is something which we know, at least conjecturally, for GLN and even other groups, although we don't have the pi of rho bar. So this is a very strong input, very strong piece of data which tells you, if you understand this correctly, what you could hope for the pi of rho bar to look like, even though you don't have it. Somehow you may hope to already have it circle. Okay, so that's why I speak about this. So I'll come back to stair weights in the end of my next lecture. And now in the time, I have a few minutes, so I want to speak about fundamental algebraic representations and explain where this business is coming from intuitively, heuristically, to make it more natural. So I think I can erase here. Okay, so this is 7. GLN of QP and fundamental algebraic representations. So we would like to extend, so the aim, the general aim underlying this thing is extend everything from GL to QP to GLN QP and even maybe to more general reductive groups. Extend everything to GLN QP. Or to GLN of F for extension of QP, or even to G of F for more general reductive groups. Okay. And so we don't know, so if we start with a row, we don't know pi of rho. So rho now is n-dimensional. Okay, representation of Galois QP bar over QP. We don't know pi of rho, okay? And we don't understand enough a suitable generalization of F. Although there is some work of Schneider and Titer, of Schneider and Vignard, which probably will be important for Schneider-Vignard. But it's not, so far, it's not completely clear. So we don't have F, we don't have pi of rho, but we would like to understand what could be F of pi of rho for GLN2P. So for GLN2QP, it is rho. Okay, but what can we guess what this is? And I would like to give you some hints which tells you that this cannot be rho, first, and even I'd like to guess, to tell you our guess with Florian on this pi of rho, F of pi of rho, and how we can use this guess to make predictions on pi of rho and test these predictions in cohomology spaces. So let me start with, so I'm going to consider a special case where rho is chi 1, chi n, like this, with the condition chi I, chi j minus 1 different from 1, epsilon, epsilon minus 1, whatever. That's a generated condition. And it's kind of clear for, we don't know pi of rho, but it's for several reasons, but it's clear that pi of rho should contain the direct sum of principal series analogous to the two principal series which are still written on the here. Except now you have n characters, so you have all the possible ordering of these characters, namely you have n factorial principal series, okay? So there's a way to write this like this. Induced from B minus of QP to GLN of QP of W applied to chi, so chi is chi 1 tensor chi 2 tensor chi n. I apply a suitable element of the Weyl group, epsilon minus 1 composed with theta, for W in the Weyl group. So Weyl group for GLN is the set of permutation, sigma n, which is cardinality n factorial. So we're pretty sure pi over should contain this as a direct summand. So for n equals 2, this is exactly the pi of rho. But, okay, so that's one thing. Now, second thing. We could have something analogous, so I don't know, dito for rho bar. Chi 1 bar, chi n bar in characteristic p. We don't know pi of rho bar, but we should expect that the pi of rho bar is direct sum of contains the direct sum of n factorial a principal series over Ke. But now we have, as I told you, we have results of many people for an Erfisch and for Diamond and Toby G and other people on Fairweight. And these results, if you look at them, they tell you that pi of rho bar should be exactly this direct sum if and only if n equals 2. Meaning if n is strictly bigger than 2, you should get more than this. Definitely. So with 2, since pi of rho bar is the direct sum over W of some principal series plus some other stuff, and this stuff is different from 0 if and only if n is strictly bigger than 2. So this is some input you get from Fairweight. Look here at the Fairweight. Okay, and then there's a third input. Still related to Fairweight, but for another group, which I'm not going to consider in the series of talks, namely the group GL2 of F, where F is a finite extension of QP. And even more, I will assume for the experts that F is unramified. So in that setting, there's a whole theory of Fairweights, which have been developed by Fred Diamond, Kevin Buzzard, and Jarvis. If you look closely at the same question, by the way, in this setting, the same question is also holds. If we have rho, which is a two-dimensional representation of Galois QP bar over F to GL2 of KE, we would like to be able to construct a pi of rho bar, which is a smooth representation of GL2F. And also we would like to understand what is such a thing, F of pi of rho bar. And doing some, so you can do lots of computation on Fairweights, and these computations heuristically suggest you the following, that this should be, or could be, this is the representation of Galois QP bar over QP, even though you start with the representation of Galois QP bar over F, and it should be the tensor induction from F to QP of rho bar. So I'm going to write it like this, F of QP of rho bar. This is what the theory of Fairweights kind of suggests to you, okay? Okay, this is the third hint. So the idea we had with Florin is to find something which interpolates 1, 2, and 3. And so there's supposed to, we need all these principal series. So, okay, what tells you 1 and 2? It tells you that F of pi of rho will be direct sum of F of this guy. And F of this guy, we can reasonably expect it to steal a character. So it's direct sum of n factorial of characters. Characters. Galois characters, characters of Galois QP bar over QP, which depends on W, plus some extra stuff which is different from 0 if and only if n strictly bigger than 2. So this is for rho. This is for rho diagonal. Okay? And in the case where we deal with GL2FP, it should be a kind of strange tensor product like this. Okay? And so our guess, so let me finish with this, and then next time I'll time to finish. So next time I'll really start from this. So here's our guess. It's just a guess. We don't pretend. I mean, we're very far from being able to prove anything on this F of pi of rho. But this guess is very helpful, as you will see. So our guess is that f of pi of rho should be the tensor product from I equals 1 to n minus 1, so question mark, of course, of lambda I over E of rho. Lambda I is the alternative product on rho. And there's a more intrinsic way to describe this, which works for more general reductive groups. It's something which is called fundamental algebraic representation. So it's the tensor product of the fundamental algebraic representation of GLN, of the algebraic GLN, the tensor product being composed with rho. Okay, so this is the explicit version of this. The best generalizes to more general reductive groups. And so in the next two talks, I will use this guess. So use this guess, aim. Use this guess to define, not pi of rho, this is still too complicated, to define a subspace, a very concrete subspace, which we call pi of rho ordinary, inside of pi of rho, which is not known. This is not known, so this will be defined concretely, in the case where rho is upper triangular. Rho is upper triangular. That's one thing. And the second thing is that we're going to prove that basically this subspace is really in the cohomology in characteristic P. Almost the weak version of this, because there's a question of multiplicities of stair weights that comes in. So that's the first thing. Aim is this first. And two, so we have the same construction for rho bar to prove that pi of rho bar ordinary is there, is really here, is really there. And the definition of this is really guided by the looking at the structure of the best fundamental algebraic representation. And I will start by explaining this tomorrow afternoon. I think it's time to start.